the environment which Wade demonstrated earlier and which Casey's using on his Mac here, and PD, which is the system running on these two machines, are primarily audio manipulation and processing environments, but they've been extended to video in a number of ways. The environments that Casey and Wade are using are fairly direct analogues to the audio processing scheme. So in the same way that you have effectively video samples which you can pass down a chain of manipulating objects, as Wade demonstrated, you can pass video down as well and have a different set of effects, but working in primarily the same way. It's quite familiar to many of you who have used guitar effects pedals or whatever. You've got a chain there, you can bypass effects, you can run them down the line. The system that I predominantly use is a system called GEM, which works from a different perspective. It's basically a 3D environment as opposed to a two-dimensional sort of film compositing approach. And whereas I guess NATO and Jitter look a lot like a sort of standard signal flow situation, what you end up with in GEM is actually very different. You end up with sort of a 3D scene graph for any of you who are familiar with 3D software or 3D programming. I'll get into that, I've got a good example of that later on. So once we've gone through the way that NATO works, which is a bit more intuitive, I'll highlight some of the differences that the GEM has. Okay, so Casey's got a patch up. I'll work on trying to get my side of that job.
What I've got here is we've got one, you can run multiple patches in NAT all at the same time, and they're what are sort of called like sends and receives, go from patch to patch, so it's not necessary to have everything all in one patch, or in fact it's quite possible to, so you have one patch running that performs one task, and which is what this receiver does. All this patch does is gets the data from Dan's machine and spits it out into the Mac environment with a sort of, you know, let me see if I can actually find a place where it spits it out and you can see it.
So the fact that these environments work with audio and video is a great thing. Means you can do all sorts of interesting manipulations or intermodulations between an audio signal and a video signal. So if you want to do, you know, videos that accompanies music in some sense, it's very easy to take sort of an audio signal, process it in some way, and use that as an effect for your video. That's more or less what Casey's catch here is going to do if I can send any audio. The obvious question is, okay, so why do we need two machines to do this? And this is...
Throwing video is very expensive in the CPU world.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, even at 320 by 240, I mean, this is a 400 megahertz machine, and it's quite easy just to... Once you get a couple real-time effects going, because the sort of like amount of data that you're processing at one time is way more than, say, audio in real time. I mean, it's a huge amount of data. So it's quite easy just to hammer your boxes. You sell yours and you get a couple effects going. So my idea behind trying to split it between two machines is that when you're sort of doing a gig, because I sort of developed this to do like video for a band live, I would use one machine to send video and then two machines on the receiving end of the sender data, which I can mix between the two with a video mixer like this. And the idea is just to only have this machine kind of drawing video and nothing else. And I tried it a billion different ways with Bob and things like he did, and I just found the frame rates to be horrendous. And it also takes up so much of Max's overhead just to do that kind of stuff. We decided to split between the two machines, and recently my older PowerBook died, and so I decided to recreate the sending, catching, PD, which is the stuff with Danny. So I can you get any audio going?
Yes, and I'm sending some data. So it looks at the
left side. Yeah.
So are you getting any joy?
I'm not. No. I'm not seeing anything.
Are you getting any
bands?
So this morning we were talking about how easy it is to use OSC. And how, you know, if you plug two cables together, you could use it in useful, interesting ways. And I think we might be proving ourselves a little bit wrong.
Right, it's possible, yeah.
But that said, if we did manage to pull this off in the 5 minutes before the show after this guy fell on his knees, it would have been quite deep.
Yeah, that was good too. I'm getting the CPU back, but I'm not getting
any of the audio. Why don't you talk us through that patch, and I'll see if I can work on it.
Well, that patch controls this patch back. So this has a section up here where I'm speaking back. I can't see it. Basically, this has places where I sent the amount of gain and a packed list of all these frequencies, which is this. You know, if I lock this, this is choosing various frequencies. This is, you know, 20 hertz to 60,000 hertz or something like that. You can see the frequencies change at the bottom here. So that's basically what this is doing. This slider here is packing up a list of frequencies and sending it to the PD machine, which in turn sets all the analysis of the frequencies on the bands or whatever. Up here is an individual gain for each band. This is the width of the analysis in hertz, so it's anywhere from 5 hertz, I think, to 120 hertz for each band. This is a smooth data smoothing, so you know, what you end up seeing when it works is a quite jagged output, you know, from audio is quite fast, and this is a way for me to smooth things out so it looks a bit more like a BU meter, you know, it's a little happier. Do you, are you really, can you turn that on, see if that's bouncing around? Because I definitely am getting data out of you, because I see the seat back by the CPU, the machine, yeah. Each time getting actually going to go this time. Yeah. And that type of thing, put out. I think it's going to take time to go. Okay, well, I can send you data for this one, too. The problem is I'm not going to use that data. Yeah, it might work, so.
Can you run it on the... Oh,
yeah. I mean, I can run up.
Alright. Well...
Alright.
If there's anything you can do in the short term, I'll switch over to some talking to you.
I'll tell you what I can do is I can find the other one.
Alright, so those, I think you've had a couple of fairly high level sort of here's a whole patch introductions. Because of the sort of show of hands and the sense I got to the audience, I'll just go back to a few sort of earlier stages and what it means to do things in a patching environment with video. So okay, so this is pure data. We had a bit of an introduction to Max before. You learned that it costs actually quite a lot of money, about $800,000, depending on which bells and whistles you buy. The author of Max, or one of the authors of Max, in a strange sort of quirk of fate, has actually developed a very similar environment which he releases free and sort of works on in his in his work time and his spare time, and it has not as many sort of nice wrapping features as Max does. You can sort of probably see immediately that these patches look much more plain, very black and white, no bells and whistles, and very few knobs. And that's the kind of trade-off you get with PD. So Pure Data offers many of the same sorts of features as Max, but is free. But on the same time, you don't get a lot of the sort of smooth features, the documentation, and so on. That said, it's a good environment for doing video and audio, and you can run it on just about anything. So you can run it on a Linux box, you can run it on a Mac, you can run it on a PC, and so on. In this morning's session, I ran through some patches which were using PD for audio, and hopefully some of you have seen those. Today I'll have give you a quick demonstration of what a patch looks like for video in PD. Apologies for scrolling around there, so let me know if you can't see anything at any stage. So I said earlier on that PD actually has a slightly different, for want of a better word, paradigm for using video than NATO and Angular use. As I said, a 3D approach. Simple batches don't look too different. So I'll start off with something that looks reasonably similar. So the first step is to create a video surface, so somewhere we can actually put an output. Pipe that right there. And start rendering. Obviously, sort of the basic approach is going to be to just take a film clip that you've recorded, maybe edit it up, process in a editing or post-production environment, you have that ready, you want to use that in a live or interesting effect scenario. What do you need for a simple touch like that? In Gem, it's a reasonably short chain of objects, and this is a simple path to get a film clip out of a file, which I'll select using these guys in a moment. Place it as a texture, so we're in 3D land here. We can't just whack it into the screen here. We actually have to use it as a texture on a geometric object. Apply that to a rectangle, which is the geometric object we're using, which will appear in this screen, and we can color and tint to do a few simple effects very easily. So, okay, what does that look like? So that's a raw rectangle, obviously. We haven't applied a texture, so it's just a white rectangle. It's very easy for us to change the color of that rectangle interactively, if you like, or we could make that operate under program control. And if we turn on alpha blending, we can easily apply that as a transparent object as well, so we can composite different layers very easily. Okay, so that's a simple geometric object. Most of you are probably more interested in pixels, so we can apply either still images or a moving stream of images very quickly. Apologies for the bad clip, I just had something lying around in my hard drive and that was exciting to see here. And it's a particularly bad example of a moving image, but if you look closely there, you can see that it's actually a live video stream. I like to demonstrate the principle a little bit more effectively. Okay, so yeah, this guy will actually move in a moment. Okay, so it's fairly easy to both create a geometric object, and of course we could easily add some more of those to our patch. We can see that it's fairly simple to do manipulation on that. We can have as many things as we like.